Hello, Internet. Welcome to the Grindhouse Clubhouse, the podcast where we watch exploitation movies and discuss them here on the show. I'm Kenny Porter, and with me is my co-host, Jessica Lane.
Hello again.
And today we have an extra special guest, a challenger who's appeared in Smash Brother terms. We have Daniel Lane, your, is it husband?
It's my husband.
Hi.
Hi. Oh.
First guest is the husband, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a really good connection.
Yeah, a little nepotism never hurt anybody.
She's my agency, which is really just like a Garfield day planner, and you were the only person written in it. So for the GDP, you're the number one choice.
There were hearts next to your name, so at least you have that going for you.
Hey, you down with GDP?
yeah, you know me. That's how I always roll.
I joke was on DDP, and I think we've moved on from that.
Okay, shit. We're going to have to learn how to do this whole three-person thing. I'd say raise your hand, but we can't see each other.
Who said that?
Am I Daniel? Who's Daniel? Okay, anyway, we'll figure it out as we go along. So, Dan, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
With us. This was technically our first sexploitation movie, although I didn't find it to have too much sex stuff in it.
No, it was mostly violence.
Yeah.
For a movie called Sex Hunter, there was very little sex in it.
No, it should have been called This Gang is Racist. That's what this movie should have been called. So the movie we watched was Stray Cat Rock : Sex Hunter, which is or just more commonly known as Sex Hunter. Although I found out there's another movie from 1980 called Sex Hunter.
I saw that too, and I started reading the synopsis, and I was like, a ballet dancer? Was she a ballet dancer? And then I realized, no.
Dancing in this movie, except for the whole, like, pop girl group that was in it. So this movie is the third in a series of the... It's either called the Stray Cat Rock series, or it's also known as the Alley Cat Rock series, which all follows this girl Mako and her girl gang, the Alley Cats.
They all follow the same group of characters? I thought it was the same cast but in different roles.
I'm pretty sure it's the same. I'm pretty sure it's the same characters because they filmed this one, which is the third one, and the second one at the same time.
Huh.
I think it is. I don't know. It was pretty loose. There's not a lot of, like, background information about it. So,
right.
I mean, yeah, you're right. Like, I know at least all the same girls are in the second one and the third one. So maybe not. We'll just say it's the third in a series.
Anyone think that maybe if we saw the second one, any of us would know what the fuck happened in this movie?
Yeah, maybe we wouldn't be so confused.
Yeah, maybe. Because, okay, so the basic premise of the movie is this group, this gang of girls called the Alley Cats gets into it with another gang of guys called the Eagles because not the Hotel California.
Don Henley did not make an appearance in this film.
No, I don't know if Don Henley's racist against half-black Japanese men. You hope he is. But the Eagle leader, who's known as Baron, his sister had been raped by a mixed race group of guys from the American naval base where he lives. So he's always had it in for mixed race Japanese people who are descendants of, visiting military personnel. And the movie is about how they find out one of the girls in the Alley Cats is dating a half black, half Japanese guy, and they decide race war.
Yep.
His racism against he called them all half breeds.
Yes. That is a term that's thrown around in here a lot.
A lot, very, very liberally. His racism, didn't really seem to spark off at all until his right-hand man, Susumu, is just kind of like, I like this girl, but she's dating this half-black, half-Japanese guy. And then all of a sudden, Baron's like, no, we gotta shut that down nationwide.
They're going to steal our women.
Well, like I said, maybe if we had seen the second one, maybe we already know that. Maybe.
I don't think they're in it, though. Oh. From the premise of the second one, I don't think that the Eagle guys are in it.
Yeah, initially the movie is just about the two gangs and how they, like, kind of get along.
Yeah, they're kind of like, they're gang buddies. They're like, we're the good, it's like the T-Birds and the, what were the other girls
Pink called? Ladies.
I never saw the Pink Ladies. yeah, big confession, I never saw Grease. But it's like T-Birds and the Pink Ladies. But, you know, if the Pink Ladies solve their problems by going outside stabbing each other at every little infraction, because...
That's how it starts.
Yeah, I know, that's how it starts. Like, they have a girl fight.
Like, yeah, like, how many films have we started that start with a girl fight? Like, that seems to be a running theme of, like, oh, is this an exploitation film? Cat fight within the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's probably, we're going to have to put that on, like, our big exploitation board that I haven't built yet.
Oh, I made sure to take notes I took a time stamp of the first time boobs are seen, so like every other film. Oh,
thanks. What do we got right now on this one?
19 minutes is all it took to get to breasts.
Yeah, this one took a while.
Yeah, for an exploitation, this is dragging it out.
For a movie called Sex Hunter, not very many boobs.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, there was more boobs in Slumber Party Massacre than there was in this. I even hate saying the title of that movie. So yeah, the premise of this movie, it starts with a good old fashioned knife fight after
flashlight
knife fight. That's so are they doing that so that they're trying to blind each other while they fight, or just because it's so dark they can't see and they want to politely stab at each other?
I think it could be dual fold. Like, I need to see who I'm stabbing, and also blind them. Like, I think you may be right.
Okay. I mean, that's just good tactical information. But go ahead.
A flashlight in the faces, like, those are big, what, 70s flashlights? Those are probably pretty bright.
Yeah. Yeah, they got some big lumens.
It'd be a hard fight, I think, especially if you're having to knife fight somebody who's just throwing a flashlight in your face the whole time.
Yeah, so Mako knife fights with, Miki. Okay, a lot of them have first names that start with M. There's like Mako, Miki, Misugi, Yuka, and a couple other girls who don't talk as much. There's like the girl with the curly bangs who doesn't really talk a lot.
Why were they fighting in the first place?
Miki was all back. Excited?
Yeah. And then Mako's just like, hey, you, let's knife fight.
Yeah.
She sassed, man. And if you sass Mako, you get the shank.
Apparently.
I guess so. Yeah.
I've never been in a gang. Maybe if you like talk back to the gang leader, time for flashlight knife fight.
And I wonder too if we watch the other movies in the series, if it explains a little bit more about Mako's personality, because the whole time I'm trying to watch this knife fight but kind of get a little bit of information about the gang. And I'm like, Mako just seems completely unstable and so quick to anger and throw a knife that, like, why is she the leader? Is everyone just afraid of her?
That's
and I think
probably
that later
it.
In the movie, later in the movie, she just throws out a big, like, oh, I'm a stray cat. I'm hard to train. Or like some weird, loosely based, like, yeah, that's just how
that's
I am.
That's her thing, man. She's that's so. Why she's always dressing like she's either Bob Dylan or like she's like she's gonna audition for the live action Vampire Hunter D movie.
Well, you know what's
funny?
Black Hat.
Go ahead.
One of my notes was Mako really pulls off the whole John Lennon final photo shoot outfit.
Well, that's what I was gonna say, because actually Yoko Ono got a lot of her inspiration with that outfit from what is that, like Holy Mountain and
Jodorowsky.
Yeah, the Jodorowsky. Yeah, but definitely there must be a little bit of like this in there too, because that hat is very Yoko Ono seems to have found some inspiration for real though from this.
Well, we can get into it a bit later, but like I think it plays into the whole East meets West theme of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of
Western influence.
And stuff like, oh, this is gonna turn into a Western.
Yeah.
And all these, like, especially with what happens with all the guns later.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so they do a little stabby stab, and then they like some of the eagles show up and are just laughing.
Yeah, they just do a quick drive-by.
Yeah, before we even know who they are, they just show up. I'm like, who are these idiots who are just laughing? And then they go back to partying, and they see the girl again. She's like, you okay? She's like, yeah, I'm all right.
That's how they work it out.
Whatever.
Yeah. Well, before they see her, though, that's where we meet Kazuma.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I nearly forgot. Yeah, yeah. The singing, wandering samurai. Which,
by the way, when Kazuma walks up, Mako has just been slashed by the knife. Like, she kind of backed up from the fight because there was a huge gash across her arm. But then, like, Kazuma shows up, Kaz, and, like, not bleeding at all. Like, just barely a scratch on her arm. She should be gushing blood.
Oh, sure. I like his intro is one of my favorite parts of the movie because he just kind of strolls up post-knife fight with this, like, Spike Spiegel-esque swagger, and he's, like, singing a song, and then he rips his shirt off with no undershirt, just like, literally give you the shirt off my back.
Yeah, there's a lot of shirtlessness by the men in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, shirts that are unbuttoned all the way. Maybe
it was, like, sexploitation in Japan because there's so many male nipples.
That's where all the sex and sex hunter is.
Where the titillation comes from.
Well, that's also, I mean, this is technically a pink film or a pinku film, which, I mean, Dan, you know, I'm a huge fan of these pinku films in that, like, censorship in Japan was very extreme for a very long time. And when they allowed for simulated sex to be shown in films, like, a huge wave of all these pinku films came out. We're, like, including some of them that sometimes I go to watch one of these films and I'm like, that was just a softcore porn because it literally just showed people having sex probably 80% of the entire time. I just wonder if this one, maybe the director was just like, well, we can't do that. We have to at least do some other stuff.
I saw a quote of his about directing pinku films because he was known as directing a wave of pinku violence films. And his quote about it was something like, I'm not good at directing sex scenes. So he was like, yeah, I'll do these movies and they'll be like kind of sexy, but like they can't be overtly sexy because I'm not comfortable in that sort of filming, you know?
It seems that all the sex in this film is mostly rape or near rape.
Yep.
Yeah, near rape would have been a better name for this.
Almost a lot of that
going on. Yeah, so we meet Kazuma, who's, you know, singing. He's got his gold shirt wrapped, gives it to Mako, and it seems at first like he knows her, but that's maybe just the way that they're being flirtatious.
Uh-huh.
Is that they're acting like they know each other? But for somebody who's like so stabby and, like, quick to jump at somebody, she's, like, so cool with this crooning, wandering dude. She's just like, hey, I kind of like this guy. He's got a sensitive side.
They're both the classic Japanese cool characters who are just so comfortable with each other from moment one.
Yeah, they can, they're just like,
sense each other's cool.
You're just, oh, man, I get the coolest radiating off you, like a hot steam bath, baby.
Right. Well, they both have a kind of big deal attitude where he's like, are you okay? She's like, yeah, I got in a knife fight. How about you? And he's like, yeah, I'm kind of looking for my long lost sister.
Yeah. So we're both like pretty cool. We got
we got some baggage, but like, you're cool.
Yeah. So they, so he's looking for a bar called Mama Blues, which will be important throughout the story. And she decides to... Does he go back with her to the first bar?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they go back to the club.
The beginning.
Yeah, well, they go back to the rock club, this, like, American rock club.
I didn't catch the name of it, but I caught the sign that was, Welcome Americans, and then underneath it, Japanese people welcome too.
Yeah, I really want to go to that club, like, really bad. I want someone to bring back, like, go-go dancing, psychedelic rock clubs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That would be real fun. But, well, you know, with less race war.
This movie just made me want that, a resurgence in psych clubs more than anything.
Yeah. I mean, especially the girl group that they had featured.
Who was quite a bit. Yeah.
Oh, that band, by the way, the name is Golden Half.
Golden Half?
Golden Half.
I think my favorite song that they did was Yellow Cherry.
Oh, definitely.
Hell yeah.
Which was about a cherry that's not quite ripe, but when you put it in your mouth, it's nice and bitter, but you'll like it. And I'm just like, oh, yeah. Jesus Christ. Like, this is making me very uncomfortable right now.
Yeah. And if you're wondering if there's subtext to that song, it's not. They blatantly are like, young girls are so much fun at the beginning of the song. It's just like, oh, jeepers.
A fun fact about Golden Half is they had a couple of hits. I don't know how long their like popularity run was, but it was a 5-member group, and every member of the band is half Japanese and has a foreign mother.
Oh.
Or, I'm sorry, a foreign father. So, like, I think there's like an Italian father, an American father, which is why most of them look, some of them just look like American.
Yeah. Well, that maybe that's why they're called Golden Half. Like,
what? Yeah. But it kind of plays into the movie a little bit too. But they're in the other club, not Mama Blues, which is like a half black, half Japanese hideaway.
Yeah, for blues lovers.
Yeah.
And purveyors.
Do those kind of, that doesn't actually exist, right? Like.
I'll consult with my expert when I talk to him tomorrow.
Okay, ask him tomorrow because I'd like to know. I mean, because they're on like near an American army base, right?
Yes.
An abandoned one, or is it still there? Because they spend a lot of time on an abandoned airstrip.
I think it was abandoned.
It's abandoned in the movie. I don't know if in real life if there's still one there in that city.
Right.
But yeah, that's another thing. Again, it's supposed to be. It was shot near the U.S. Naval base at Yokosuka, and I don't know if that's still there or not. I could find out. I mean, it could be a thing over there if they were there long enough, if the naval base is still running.
I know American bars are a thing. Like, I know about that, but I just wondered if there were, like, special, but like you said, like, because, like, when they're in Mama's Blues? Mama's Bar?
Mama Blues,
whatever. When they're in that bar, like, they show the walls and stuff, and it's photos of, like, black revolutionary leaders and stuff, and I don't know. Maybe it was just made up for the movie, of course. Like, that makes a way more sense, but I just wondered if something like that existed at some point, like a refuge for...
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it would only help to serve the plot. I don't know if it's real or not. I can ask Aaron when I talk to him tomorrow during Future Brothers if he's, like, before we record, like, hey, is this legit? Or is
this just made up? I'll be waiting with bated breath because I'm interested.
Okay.
So this
you
is
are when interesting.
I am.
Keeping the spark alive.
Yeah, you know it, baby.
So this is then when they jump to just like an opium den.
Yeah, which is just an apartment.
Yeah, just an apartment. I think
Baron's
apartment.
Yeah, the Eagles are like, come smoke dope with us. And I didn't know what they were doing at first.
Those, like, crayons, essentially, that they were smoking.
Yeah, that's what they were doing, because they were, like, rolling in these really weird different colored papers and then putting them in specialty fancy-ass, like, roach holders.
Yeah, those were cool as fuck.
I have never done drugs that fancy before.
No, neither have I.
I was also...
Yeah.
Go on, I'm sorry.
No, no, no. I was just going to say that, like, I haven't smoked a cigarette in well over a year, but those little holders, I was kind of like, shit, I wish I would have had one of those. I've been the coolest person. Yeah.
Well, they kept talking about, like, hashish, because one of the girls was like, yeah, you know, I met this guy and we smoked hashish together and blah, blah, blah. And that's what I thought they went to. I think that was the apartment that they have the American party in later.
Yeah.
I think that was the same apartment.
It's
but they
Baron's
go there
apartment.
And, yeah, and the drugs, though, are, like, so fake. And I'm, like, just looking at the scene being like, those aren't drugs. What are those?
So is it supposed to be marijuana, like, hashish? Because they got...
That's what I thought.
Then none of them have ever been high, because...
Yeah, because they're acting like super lightweights, or they are doing something way more hardcore.
That seemed much more like an opium high. Like, most definitely more like an opium high. Very like, oh, man, the world is so... You know, that's not weed.
Yeah. I don't know. It could also have been opium. I've just never seen, like, these bright red and blue and green crayon-thick things ever in a drug scene.
I
don't know what it was.
Yeah, I don't know either. But that was weird. That was a weird scene because we'd get that, like, I never remember his name. I wrote it down. Susumu, is that it? Susumu.
Susumu is Baron's right-hand man who kind of sparks the whole race war.
Yeah, he really wants to be with Mari, Mari, and Mari's like, nope, peace, I'm out, I'm going to this bar. And we find out she's meeting up with Ichiro, who is half black, half Japanese, and that pisses Susumu off.
Big time.
Like, big time. Oh, yeah. That's when he comes back. So I think that's when we first hear the word half-breed.
Yes.
And they're like,
it won't be the last.
No, no. So it's, they go and beat the shit out of him. Like, really, really beat him up.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kazuma's like, hey, man, back off.
Yeah, because he happened to be at the bar because it's at Mama Blue's. And, God, this movie, this all sounds like a plot, but it's not a fucking plot.
No,
he's like at Mama Blue's because he's trying to find his sister, and it seems that maybe Mama Blue's adopted his sister, or was their, like, foster mom for a minute or something. They never, like, quite, it's like half, they half explain everything all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just confused. It's,
every little detail is dropped mid-statement and dialogue, like, in a sentence in between, sandwiched between two or three other ones. So I had to stop a lot of times and go, okay, let me see if I can say out loud what I think is going on.
Yeah.
Basically what people are talking about.
Well, that's even like we find out about the Baron's sister was raped by quote-unquote half-breeds or by like Americans or whatever, whoever she was raped by. They didn't quite exactly explain. They did like a crazy flashback where it's like a black and white plane and then it's like splatter of blood across the screen. And I was like, oh, okay, that's what movie we're kind of getting into. Nope, that was it. That was the only scene like that.
Oh, yeah, which sucks because that was kind of a cool
Yeah, I was like, this is going to be sweet. Nope.
I hope you liked it because we blew the budget on that one sequence.
I feel like the crux of the movie, like the main backbone, is so fast that that scene in particular where the Baron is laying out his motivation is just, it's like a minute. It's very quick and he's just like, my sister was raped. It's time for war. And then the rest of the movie kind of happens and I don't know.
It's kind of weird that he wasn't doing this the entire time. It's just
it just
reminds me of something terrible that happened to me a long time ago. I think I'm going to be mad about that again.
Well, Susumu rolls up and he's like, oh, I want to date. What was her name? Mari. Yeah. Oh, I really want to go out with Mari, but Mari's into this half black guy. And then Baron's like, wait a minute, half black guys. Hold on, I remembered something.
I remembered. I hate those guys.
Oh, I know.
But I hate those guys.
And then this horrible, horrible stuff happens.
Oh, so they go the next day because Kaz. I'm going to call him Kaz. I can't. I'm not very good with Japanese names, unfortunately.
Bitch, I just found out that guy is also in, strangely enough, the Toxic Avenger Part 2.
Oh, Kazuma is?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
He played Big Mac Bunko.
I could not. Yeah, I haven't seen the Toxic Avenger
movies in forever, but I'm just saying. Just figure that out. But yeah, go ahead, Kaz.
Yeah, they go to Kaz's work the next. No, not Kaz's work. They go to Ichiro's work the next day.
That's the guy
who Mari was dating. Yeah.
The Coke bottling loading job, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which I will say, because they start to beat him up, normal beat up scene, and then they at a certain point smash a Coke bottle and then hold the broken shards like right up to his dick. I can bet you $1 million Coca-Cola did not pay for that product placement.
I'm pretty sure it was implied that they cut him.
Yeah, he started pushing hard.
Ooh.
And then it pushed up, and then he started like screaming louder. So I'm almost certain that he got done dick stabbed with a bottle.
You guys, you know what I just realized now that we're talking about it, with all this like xenophobia in this film, they kept showing like advertisements for things, including this scene where they have the Coca-Cola logo very, very prevalent.
Yeah, they also used Coke bottles as a weapon later on.
Yeah, exactly. The Molotovs.
They only did that with like very American companies. They did like Coca-Cola and Lucky Strike. They just like very much like displayed these American institutions that have like infiltrated quote unquote Japan.
And we're using them as weapons.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Eagles all used U.S. military jeeps. They all had Western styles they liked. It all builds into this East meets West thing, but I kept looking at that and thinking, oh, this movie's really well done because there's all the Coke and there's all the Lucky Strike product placement, but then only like half a plot. So I kept trying to follow it, thinking, wow, this movie's really smart.
Well, that's
maybe I'm not smart enough to understand the movie.
Well, that's because they keep throwing in the Kaz thing, like Kaz finding his sister, and I was like, how is this going to play into the xenophobia of the film? Like, how is this? How is this? And it doesn't. Like, it never does. It just happens to be, like, two plots that only go, like, halfway and then just, like, try to flop them together at the end.
It's a Power Rangers episode.
That's a perfect – this is a Power Rangers
movie. It's like, here's the monster plot. And that mixed with the A plot, and then here's the B plot or whatever the fuck Bulk and Skull were doing that week. And then at the end, somehow both of them come together for some reason and then are resolved.
We need just enough plot to tie these fight scenes and showdowns together.
Exactly, loosely. Yeah.
But that's what kind of sucks, though, because the whole them hating the half-breeds and his sister was raped. And I mean, it has like a lot of potential.
Yeah, it does. There's parts of it. It's weird because it's like the sequences are good, but together, not so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like some of the scenes were really great. Some of the scenes were fucking amazing.
Yeah. So let's just drop going through it play by play for this one because it's a little bit less plot driven and it's more just like there's some cool shit that happened.
I agree. I completely agree.
All right. The house voted Dan, so sorry.
Oh, all right. That's fine.
You're a guest.
We don't care what you're fucking
opinion just a willing was. I'm just a willing participant.
Okay. Cuz after they get into everything, there's a lot of sequences where Kazuma at first is really cool and everything and then becomes weird about just grabbing girls in public and being like, "Are you my sister?"
Yeah.
I feel like there was a big scene that's just missing because in one scene he's cool as ice and then the next scene he seems like broken and disconnected from reality and like the entire end of the film, I have no idea why he is doing what he's doing.
Well, he also he seems to get really upset when women are promiscuous, like at all. Like the first woman he gets all grabby with and like pissed about, she was getting like her leg tickled by some older businessman. And then like when his, spoiler alert, turns out the girl in the gang that has the same name as his sister is his sister. Oh, fate. Yeah. There was no fucking
didn't
surprise.
Didn't see that one coming.
Yeah. Like she gets... Unfortunately, at the end of the film, gets like brutally assaulted sexually and physically by the Eagles, and he just seems to like turn on her. Like it's I don't know what like is that supposed to be a message of some sort?
I don't know. So many characters have these big 180s, like Susumu, where he's the one who kind of sparks the race riot and then comes out as being half Japanese.
Yeah,
when they're assaulting Megumi, it's like. Look, racism's fine, you guys, but rape? No.
I mean, at least he drew the line somewhere.
And it cost him his life.
Which I guess doesn't even make sense because he was participating in that rape party before that. Because if you're wondering if this movie has a rape party scene in it, it does.
I thought it was a fucking prom at first, and I was like, I didn't realize that gangs had proms. And then I was like, wait, what the fuck am I thinking?
Did anybody pay attention to what was being served at the American party? It was like fried chicken in aluminum foil and soda. Yes.
No, I didn't. I missed that.
It was the KFC thug throwdown.
Basically, yeah, like orange soda and fried chicken. And I was just like, what is happening in this movie?
A delicious spread is what's happening. My mouth just watered.
I know. You must be a half-breed.
I'm fried chicken and orange crush, man. Who doesn't?
Well, they threw that party because it turns out the Eagles had sold the girls as a way to teach them their place.
Yeah, I mean, the best lesson... Yeah. To be gang-raped by a stranger.
I was actually pretty uncertain of why that happened. Like, why they sold the girls. It just kind of happens all of a sudden.
I think they were pissed because that was right after the girls were helping Kaz with his mission.
Right.
And they were all, like, jealous.
Teach them to find long-lost sisters.
Yeah.
Was this after Kaz stumbled into a jewelry shop and started shaking employees?
Yeah, that was a wild one.
Oh,
and that very awkward exchange between the manager and the two American ladies who were there.
I wrote it down. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, please. Ladies,
I like the sapphire. Manager, yes, period. Other lady, oh, I do too. Manager, excuse me. Ladies, you're welcome.
I laughed so hard at that. You're welcome.
Just like, I had to rewind it because I was like, what?
Well, even when they do have someone speaking English later at the sex prom, prostitution prom, they
Not place that guy's accent.
No, I could not figure it out. And he was supposed to be speaking English, but he's like, I think my favorite, he just goes, oh no. Like that's it. But in this weird, like, Russian, Ukrainian kind of accent.
I thought it was like, what is going on in here?
Yeah,
I mean, Russia and Japan aren't too far away, so maybe. But I love, like, this weird broken English, because the movie's so... There's so much American influence in the movie, but they couldn't find somebody, one of the extras, and be like, hey, can you double check this for us to make sure that, excuse me, you're welcome makes sense?
I feel like, too, when the whiteys at the party speak Japanese, I think it's supposed to be that they were terrible at it. Because every time they speak, they get, like, these dirty looks from the Eagles. So maybe if we spoke Japanese, that scene would have made a little more sense. By the way, I hate that their name is the fucking Eagles. It's Stray Cat Rock and the Eagles. Like, come on.
The Eagles.
I just really love Hotel California. They love to listen to it while they go and run on their race war.
Race and rape.
He's like, nothing feels better than beating a half-breed.
They used to only be into one, race or rape, and then someone misread a note one time. And
both.
But I'm so confused at this movie, because I feel like there was a deeper, like, good movie hidden somewhere in there. I get these notes that were kind of clever. Like, because this movie's pretty forward-thinking. It's 1970, and blaxploitation hasn't really reached international popularity for 4 or 5 years, and this movie's very pro-minority, and it's well ahead of the time, because Japan in it of itself is very xenophobic.
Yeah.
So I'm like, wow, this movie's pretty forward-thinking.
But it doesn't solve any of those problems.
Yeah, I know, I don't get it. There's so much Western influence, there's neon signs everywhere, the Eagles are just like... Western obsessed, but then they're super racist at the core, and I'm like, but why?
It's why? The biggest, weirdest turn is after Misugi's assaulted, is that Kazuma, like, won't acknowledge her existence.
That's what I said. I mean, the whole thing about, like, if a woman is, like, promiscuous, which I'm like, is that why? I don't, why? Just say it.
Because there were two different ways that I saw it, because at first... I thought it was playing that he was like, I'm leaving town, I'm trouble, I'm worthless, and because he can't see her when she's being consoled by the owner of Mama Blues.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, if you see my sister, tell her that she doesn't have a brother and that she never did. And then Mama Blues goes, what are you talking about? This is your sister right here. And then he looks at her and then repeats what he said. And at first I was like, oh, maybe he's like... trying to, before he knew that it was her in her arms, he was just trying to leave town, but now he's gonna go get a gun and he's saying forget about him because he's gonna die. But then when he fights off everybody at the end and wins, he fucking shoots her.
Yeah, that's like the most confusing, because I could also see him too saying she doesn't have a brother because everyone just found out that he's a half-breed, which would make her also a half-breed potentially.
Exactly.
So that is kind of pushing her way.
I don't know if we're supposed to read in deep enough that he, like, snaps. Because he spends all this time looking for it, like, since childhood, looking for her.
Uh-huh.
Finally finds her after this bout of, like, I'm never going to find her. I'm shaking jewelry store employees trying to find her. Finds her, proves that it's her by pointing out the scar on her arm. And then she's like, I can't accept this. And then he gets all shocked and kind of runs out. And I think, like, that's supposed to be the scene where he, like, snaps, where he kind of becomes disjointed, because from then on, he's just batshit crazy.
Yeah, but so then does he shoot her because it's like she's unclean, or does he shoot her because like he thinks her life is over and he thinks it's a mercy killing, or is it just because he's nuts?
I couldn't say because I could not understand the ending whatsoever.
Yeah, it's weird.
I will say the best part about that ending, though, is because it all accumulates to a shootout that, like, so Kaz gets a gun and him and Mako run away, and then they've shot at the Baron and all the other Eagles. And then they're hiding out in a tower with their rifles, and then all the, like, this happens. But the best part of that whole thing is there's finally a showdown between Baron and Kaz, even though we've barely built up a tension between those two, but whatever. And they just hold their guns right at each other and shoot each other, non-exaggeration, probably 25 times each.
Oh, they sprint until they fall over. Baron sprints up to Kaz and they blast each other at close range with rifles over and over.
Not much blood, just a couple of bullet holes and a little bit of blood on their shirt, and also no headshots. No one shot the other person in the head.
Oh, it was incredible.
And then it made no sense too, because he's like practicing before they get there by shooting poles far away. And it's like, oh, so he's going to snipe them because he's the only character with a rifle and a scope. And he's like, no, like, doesn't do that to any of them. Waits until the guy gets 3 feet in front of him to start unloading the...
That scene does not come into play whatsoever.
Why does Kaz shoot his sister? It made no sense. There's no way to look at it for it to make sense. Maybe it was a mercy killing, not because her being promiscuous from being raped, kind of like thinking, but possibly like that's the kind you're never going to get out of that life. You know?
Yeah, I can see that.
Like you're always going to live a life where you're in a girl gang, but still, even that, you don't kill. I don't know. It didn't make any sense.
Kaz didn't seem to have a problem with the girl gang. He kind of skirted the boundaries between the two gangs. He was just this third party, you know?
Yeah, the boys didn't like him, but only because the girls thought he was handsome.
Yeah. Well, and he was half black, half Japanese.
No, that's true, too.
There's a race war going on. Yeah, you know there's a race war. Speaking of half black, half Japanese, at Mama Blues, why do you two think it was that they shot every scene in Mama Blues in a square format?
I noticed that too.
Oh yeah. Maybe that's just the camera they had there on that set for the day they shot.
I was like, again, it's another scene where I was trying to read in perhaps too deep because maybe there's no meaning at all. I thought maybe they were doing it because in closing in the shot like that, it showed intimacy. Because at first, it was a date scene. The first time you see Mama Blues, it's Ichiro and Mari.
Uh-huh.
And it's a date. So I'm like, okay, it's a date. They're shooting it close, so it feels more intimate. But then they go back later, and it's still shot in a square format. I thought maybe... they were doing that to show that Mama Blues was like a small hideout for mixed race Japanese.
Sure.
I mean, you can say sure. I just always feel like after watching so many exploitation films and everything, sometimes I'll try and do that too, where I try and justify it. And then I go back and I look up the budget and I'm like, oh, $8,000. No, it was just the camera they had on set that day. Someone forgot to bring the other one.
What was the movie where I started assigning like really deep meanings to shit?
Oh, you started it from the very beginning. That was
on Master Pussycat, where I was like, the colors of their shirts recognize the like good and evil levels that they are, and you're like, Kenny, shut the fuck up.
In Slumber Party Massacre,
what it shows is just how in the 1980s everybody was just so blinded to the problems going on that
the top. Helplessness represents.
Oh God, Jesus Christ!
Our bare foreign policy.
There's a lot. I feel like there's a lot of interesting stuff in this movie, and there may be absolutely nothing to any of it. Like this movie is whatever you want it to be, basically.
Just needed a script doctor to come in and fix, or needed I don't know. It could have been good if they would have gone with just all the race stuff. It would have been fucking sweet. Like it could have been a really fantastic film.
remember, they shot this one and another one at the same time.
That's true. So they may have just forgotten stuff.
From one set to another. So maybe it was just like, we just have to bang both these two. These movies came out the same year, too.
Oh.
The second one and this one, the third one.
Maybe we should all watch the other films in the series, or at least the first two.
Yeah.
Try to figure out what the hell is going on.
I think I'm going to, only just to see if it makes this one make any more sense.
I'm a guess no, but I mean, you
I
do
agree.
You.
You do you.
You're not going to stop me from this. You're not going to advise me against this.
Yeah, the party scene too was real weird because it's like, so the guys at the Lucky Strike Factory run a secret gangbang party escort service.
I guess they, so.
Bunch of question marks in that sentence that need to be there.
Yeah, it just did. There's like so many question marks. The sentence is wearing a Riddler outfit. At this point. Yeah. And it was like, we're talking about the Coca-Cola being used as a weapon again. Like, they go to the Coke factory. I mean, it doesn't show up, but they show up with the six packs of Coke bottles as Molotov cocktails and burn the whole place to like throw fire bombs at everybody to stop the raping from happening.
Which is real great because they go back later to that apartment because it's Baron's apartment. Minimal smoke damage. Very minimal. I'm pretty sure if you threw a bunch of Molotov cocktails in your house, you wouldn't just have a couple of soot marks on one wall. Yeah.
It's kind of risky throwing Molotovs around in an apartment building like
that. Another thing I thought, not a great crowd control weapon.
No.
Or arrest strategy. Like, no. Flashbangs, yes. Molotov cocktails, no. Anybody who's played The Last of Us can tell you that.
I feel so like...
What else is there to say about this movie? What else are we going to dig into, guys?
Can we, for as horrible of a racist as he was, can we talk about how excellent the Baron was?
He was cool. Okay.
The Baron was... Oh, and we didn't even talk about that scene at the bar. Like, the coolest scene in the whole movie where they're all at the bar talking to each other and not looking at each other, and they have this...
Oh, the part where they're doing the threatening, like, I'm just here looking for my sister.
The John Wayne scene?
Yeah, the Western Showdown was the coolest scene in the whole movie.
Yeah, it was pretty great. That was very much like a Western where it's like, I'll leave town, but not until I get my sister. And he's like, not until I find her first. And stuff.
I feel like I don't know what's really going on with the Baron because he's such an interesting character anyway, that he's this like over macho
sunglasses at night
gang leader, but he's like impotent and he's super aggressive, and anybody who calls him out on his impotency gets shot or whatever.
Do you think he's impotent because he watched his sister get raped? Like, he can't do sex stuff because that's what I got from it.
Triggers
like
it.
He sensitive.
Yeah, he can't do physical intimacy because of what happened.
Oh, okay, wait. So maybe you guys are boys and the whole impotence thing made you latch onto it a little more. I just thought it was just he couldn't get it up just for...
Oh, okay.
I just mean, like, for me, I'm just like, oh, impotence, whatever. But, like, you guys are like, oh, no, this is serious.
Another day, woman trying to accuse me that my dick doesn't work.
I thought it was just Mako, and I thought it was, like... Because she asks him, like, earlier at the opium den, like, why don't you fuck me?
She asks him a couple of times.
Yeah, and then she's like, you can't get it up. Okay, I get it now. You guys are smarter than me.
Well, there's the scene where he takes her away from the American party, and then it cuts to them in the hotel room, and she's all over him, and he springs up out of bed, which, by the way, he's laying in bed with her. With a towel on. So, I mean, that could also lead into his impotency problems. But he springs up and starts, like, diving into this glass of scotch and reminiscing about how he's like, oh, you know, whatever, women. Women.
Yeah, maybe it was his sister. Maybe he's a never nude.
Okay, that makes
sense. Never knew.
He does have my favorite line from the whole film when she's like...
She pulls a knife on him.
Yeah, she pulls a knife on him and he goes, but I bought you a cool leather jacket.
She's like, I ripped it up. And he's like, but I bought you Dior something or other, some fancy perfume. I smashed the bottle.
I laughed so hard at that scene when he's like, I bought you a cool leather jacket. It was just so perfect.
Next time Tracy gets pissed at me, I'm saying, but I bought you a cool leather jacket.
I love that he never took his sunglasses off. I mean, like, his style and everything just leads into his character so well, and I thought it was so clever because he's like, he's got that mustache, which is a sign of virility. Like, the facial hair, he always wears sunglasses, and he's got... There's that scene where he comes back to his apartment after the alley cats throw Molotovs all over the place, and he strolls in a blazer and suit pants, but no shirt.
It was a good look. It was a real good look. Like I said, lots of shirtless men or almost shirtless men. It was great.
Yeah, and he's so interesting, and his character just boils down to like, oh, I've suddenly remembered that my sister was raped by half Japanese, half blacks, and I hate them. Let's go kill
you guys. We don't know. Maybe he just blocked it out until this guy mentioned it.
But you know what?
This movie's so deep, you guys.
You were talking about how Mako is like completely unstable, but Baron's unstable as well because. Susumu seems to be his, like you said, his right-hand man, almost seems to be his best friend as well. But the second Susumu just, like, it goes against one thing that he says, he shoots him. Like, he lights him up.
So I think at that point in time, he may have been too deep into this thing, this, like, race war he sparked. I don't know what I'm talking about anymore.
Mako did stab her friend.
That's what I'm saying. But like, I feel like Mako and Baron are, like, they're perfect for each other.
Yeah.
This movie, I feel like... is a very clear influence to cool Japanese media. Earlier I mentioned Kazuma being Spike Spiegel-esque. Kenny, did you get when Susumu got shot, it went into slow motion and started playing like sad, smooth jazz?
Yeah, exactly. It was just like real folk blues all over again.
The only thing I could think of, I was like, this is so Cowboy Bebop right here. Kazuma even looks like Spike Spiegel. He's got the afro, and he's all tall and lanky. I'm like, this movie must have been such an influence on, like, Watanabe.
It could have been. It would have made it a lot cooler if Kazuma was a smooth-talking... Jeet Kune Do using badass instead of a weird sister shaker.
So also if he had a spaceship.
What did I say to you when I finished watching it, Dan? I was like, I feel like I just woke up from a fever dream.
I think the first thing you said was, what?
That's pretty true, too. Well, because I say fever dream, but I genuinely mean it in that I couldn't, like, trying to explain this film is like, all right, well, there's this guy. But see, he's looking for his sister, but then there's this other guy and he always wears sunglasses. And he doesn't like this because of this. And it's like, there's no, and then I woke up. Like, I just feel like this movie is like, and then I woke up, you know,
this crazy dream. And it ended with me like blasting this other dude away with a rifle at close range.
And then my sister.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also my sister was there.
I feel like we could talk for hours about why he killed his sister. It genuinely makes no sense.
Could we?
So many. We just sat here and made up subplots. Like, okay, now you see, really, his sister was really behind the whole American gang rape party like planning, right? And so he was like, I can't stand for this. And it's all in the subtext about how he buttons his shirt.
But, I couldn't think of a single reason other than just he went crazy. I just, like, I couldn't make sense of it at all. And like, why is any of this happening right now?
That he was just full-on cuckoo bananas?
I think so, yeah. I don't get it. I don't get it.
I also I really enjoyed when it was Susumu versus the Baron in that fight scene, which there should have been a seizure warning for it, because...
Oh, yeah. Oh, when he shoots him.
Yeah, when he's shooting him, because it, like it flashes between the two of them very quickly. Like, it's just like... And it was really intense, and I do love too that there was a pure don't bring a knife to a gunfight kind of scene, because he's getting like lit up with bullets. He's like riddled with bullet holes, and then he like pulls a knife out, like that's gonna do shit. They're like 100 yards away from each other.
Yeah. So far away from him.
He's like, do I throw it? It would be pretty badass if I threw it and I got him.
Because he have like one less cool moment.
I couldn't figure out how many times he shot him either.
Yeah.
Because of that fast editing. I'm like, did he just shoot him like the 2 or 3 times? Or did he shoot him like 30 times?
That's true.
Everybody has like infinite ammo in this movie. When they do the whole like Baron Kazuma shooting back and forth, I'm like, that rifle should have been out of bullets a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. Movie guns. endless clips.
That
being said, though, I thought this movie was, like, by the time it was done, I was very confused, but I thought it was a really cool movie. I don't know what else to say.
Like,
it was
shot cool.
I was like, it was pretty cool. Like, it was really slick. It was really stylish. They had this kind of On Way thing going on, but it was really psychedelic. But just like, what did I just watch?
I liked the movie before it was done.
Yeah.
Like, while I'm watching it, I enjoyed it. But I kept expecting all of these loose threads of this film. This was like an episode of Lost or something. Like, it ends, and I'm like, oh, why'd they kill his sister? Holy shit, we're going to find out. But no, that's the end. Like, it's the end.
We'll never find out.
Never find out.
You guys, I'm going to be pondering about this for, like, a long time. And I'm never going to come up with an answer.
If Kenny's right, and this is a series of movies, we may find out what happened in, I don't even remember what. Stray Cat.
Mako will return in Stray Cat Rock 4.
Yeah.
No, because he gets got. No, Mako. Mako doesn't. I don't know. Yeah, I gotta. Because it's like the names of these films are great too. Like, not like Sex Hunter.
Sex Hunter is a good name.
Delinquent Girl Boss.
Yep, that's the best one.
Scorpion Girl Prisoner or something. It's like really.
Isn't that a separate series?
I'm not sure. I'm kind of confused with all of these. I'm going to look up all the Stray Cat Rock ones and see if I can find.
I think there's five of them, right?
The next movie will open with Megan just having a cigarette. And she's like, so it turns out he just went fucking nuts. And she ashes it. And she's like, all right, on to our next adventure. In quotation marks.
She got knifed earlier and she seemed to kind of roll from that. Okay. Wait, was that Megumi? No, who were they fighting in the beginning? That was somebody else. Never mind.
You know, but Miki takes a knife. She takes a knife to the fucking gut and then is drinking a gin and tonic 12 minutes later.
Yeah. Oh, they beat Kazuma to death so many times and then they just take him to a bar and he's fine. It's like video game logic of like, oh, they got to him in time and healed him. So he's good.
Yeah, all these people, they roll over from their injuries pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I want to live in that fictionalized world where it's just like, oh, you're fine. You can get shot 20 times. And you're okay at point blank until that last one hits you.
Did you just get dragged under a Jeep? You're fine.
Yeah, and spitting up gravel. Remember he was doing that?
Oh, yeah, and then immediately followed by spitting out blood.
Yeah.
That scene, by the way, where they go, I think that, they go see Kaz, and he's working on a Jeep, and then they drive the Jeep over him, and he gets dragged by it for a little while. I'm like, Kaz, why did you grab onto the Jeep? The Jeeps have such a high clearance. He could have just laid down and it would have driven clear over him and he would have been fine.
I don't know. I mean, we don't know because we weren't in that situation. We didn't know what he was thinking. He could have previously wrestled a Jeep with his bare hands. And
what a bad
idea. Just didn't work. He is a traveling bard. So we don't know what sort of adventures he's had.
You guys, this movie kind of sucked.
I suddenly realized this movie sucks.
Well, I just finished watching it like an hour and a half ago, and I'm like letting this all process. And as we talk about it, I realize like this movie, for the fact that it had fucking gangs, girl gangs, opium dens, race wars, Japanese girl bands dancing to like sexually implicit words, all of this stuff. This movie was
and Coke bottle dick stabbing.
Yeah, Coke bottle. You say all this stuff. I made you a bullet point list. Molotov cocktails, like Jeeps running over dudes. This movie was real fucking boring for having all of that shit.
Well, can I ask you this question? Do you think the title was misleading?
Yes.
I was 100% on board for like Sex Hunter. Like, I don't know what that meant, but I wanted to find out, and I have no idea why it was called Sex Hunter.
Why is it called Sex Hunter?
Because they go after the girls, so it's more like sex in terms of male-female?
No, that's bullshit. Don't fucking...
But the movie was about...
It's not Gender Hunters.
The movie was about race tension. I think.
Gender Hunter. Target woman. It is. It should have been called Race War.
The most dangerous race. Women.
I bet you 100% that they try to submit it with the title Stray Cat Rock: Half Breed, and they were like, no.
They're like, American no, audiences are not going to do that.
No, a million times no.
Half-breed. I felt like it was like Harry Potter or something.
Yeah. Mudblood.
Stray cat rock, colon, mudblood.
Mudblood. Stupid blood.
Let's see. Oh, I did like in the. I did not like this movie. I regret picking it.
Oh my god! Wait, hang on. Momentous occasion on the podcast.
I know.
You picked a movie you didn't like.
I know. I did not.
Celebrate good times. Come on.
I know.
You gotta pay for that royalty.
Which really sucks because it has all of the elements of a. Like I said, it's all the elements. Just the fact that it's a Japanese girl gang film, there. Done. So, like, that's 100% things I like.
This is a well known series of movies, too.
Yeah, so I don't know. But I will say one thing. Go ahead, you finish it because my thing is dumb.
We found out too that this director has a movie that's in the Criterion Collection.
Oh, what movie?
Lady Snowblood. Have you ever seen it before?
No.
It's Kill Bill. It's the original.
Say, have you ever seen Kill Bill? Then you've seen Lady Snowblood.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
It's it heavily emphasizes Kill Bill. Like Quentin Tarantino admits it as well. Like it's one of the films that that pays great tribute to with Kill Bill. It's about a woman who goes on revenge. So there you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like the director is an all right director who's obviously got a little bit of credit, but this movie is just not great.
No.
It's a lot less exciting than the trailer made it out to be.
Okay, you know what? At least it's not as bad as Slumber Party Massacre.
Yeah, that's true. You guys, he also directed a movie called Raping with an exclamation point.
Oh, no.
Well.
Yeah, in 1978.
I guess we found what his fetish may be.
Yeah, maybe that's just his thing.
I don't know. Oh, what I was going to say, though, is the scene where...
Oh, my God. I don't want to see... Okay, can we put one on the list I don't want to see? What, I don't want to see...
Is it raping with an exclamation point?
Yeah, because the premise is a woman on her way to Tokyo is repeatedly raped by various men she encounters on the highway.
Oh.
No, okay. Thanks.
I'm going to put it on the fucking list. Oh, my God.
Never watch that. She's like bumping it up in the queue.
Next time on the Grindhouse Clubhouse.
No, that's the movie. That's not an adjective. That's the name of the movie. Don't put the exclamation point. Yeah, so I guess final thoughts? I guess, I'd say it had a lot of cool stuff in it, but.
Watch the trailer.
Watch the trailer.
The trailer is fucking sweet.
The movie that you can make up in your head is way better than this one.
It's like Rogue One.
Yeah, or watch a trailer and then watch the first, let's say, 45 minutes to an hour of the film and then never watch the rest.
And then set it down and go do something else.
Yeah, immediately. Kenny,
did you just make a slam on Rogue One?
I did. I only liked like 60% of Rogue One.
You and I are going to have words, my friend.
we'll have to have them off air because this is not a Star Wars podcast.
It's going to get rough.
Okay. It's going to get rough like a girl gang. So I'd say me. Yeah, I'd go with Jessica's recommendation on this one. We haven't talked about what we're gonna do for the next one, have we?
No, it's your turn, and you have a lot of pressure on you because you've picked nothing but terrible films.
Well, I feel like you picked a not so great one this time.
I know, I hate that.
This is nowhere near Slumber Party Massacre.
No, Slumber Party Massacre was like. It was so bad.
I didn't mind watching this. I thought that there was a lot of cool stuff in it. I don't think the story was all that great, but there was a lot of cool stuff in it. I agree. I'm like split between the two of you.
I'm like yawning talking about this film, which it shouldn't. It, like I said, has so many things.
There was a lot of cool imagery, but just like not enough content to really tie it together. It was so loosely tied together.
Yeah.
Gotcha. much how been... people describe.
could have suffered because they were shooting two movies at the same time.
That's what I'm guessing.
I don't. But how did the other one fare? We haven't even watched the other one.
I don't know. I guess we'll have to check that out, and then we'll have to update everybody on what our next movie is going to be once I take the arduous task of crawling through Movie Mountain to pick which our next. I'm gonna do my this time. I swear to God, I'm not gonna pick a movie just based on the title. I swear, no, I won't do that.
Keep doing it because it's really great. I love really. I also think Slumber Party Massacre 2 needs to happen in the future at some point.
Because of that drill bit guitar.
Yep, because there's a guitar playing serial killer who sings, who has a musical number in it. The fact that it's a horror film with a musical number says everything I need to know.
Okay, well, maybe we'll do that. If we don't do that one now, we'll do it for Halloween. All right, well, Dan, thank you so much for being on the show.
Of course.
Feel free to come back whenever you want.
We promise it'll be a better movie than Sex Hunter, that's for sure.
It was almost there. It's like they almost had an all right movie.
Missed it by that much.
I know. They were almost near something that could have maybe have been something, maybe.
Almost near something that could have been something, maybe. You can go on iTunes and give us a good review on our podcast because that would help other people find it. And then you can also find us on Twitter and, you know, generally around the interwebs. So thanks again, everybody, for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Bye.